from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Wojtyn.
Records were broken today on this show. The most amount of text sent in within a 15-minute period happened today. Why? Because it was all based on what should Ursula have done after she was rear-ended on Lake City Way. Ursula?
I'm astounded by the number of people who are texting in, and I thank you. And so many of the comments were very thoughtful. We've also posted it on our G and Ursula Show Facebook page. We're going to bring it back at 11:30 because I'm listening to you. I'm reading what you're saying. I'm hearing what you're saying. And I do need to have additional conversations with this young man and his dad. And so
I just hope you may be convincing me.
So again, we'll bring it back up, but I want you guys to continue weighing in both on our text line 888-973-5476 and also on our G and Ursula Show Facebook page. Join us there.
All right, Ursula. Let's see. What's new at 10?
What's new at 10?
And this is the time that we're going to be bringing in Michael Medved. It's 24 hours earlier than usual, but we always want to have this conversation. And because we're going to have Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell on, we decided to have Michael on today. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Sorry about your accident, but always grateful to stand aside for His Honor the Mayor.
Appreciate that, and I'm fine. Thankfully, I was not hurt. So we're going to jump right in, and one of the top stories this week is this horrible thing that happened in Buffalo. An 18-year-old is accused of killing 10 people and injuring 3 in Buffalo. And as you know, Michael, he was specifically targeting a black community. And throughout what he posted right before the massacre, he was bringing up replacement theory as to one of the reasons why he was doing this. And I want to bring up Tucker Carlson, who we talked about yesterday, obviously Fox News host, biggest audience. And he says any criticism of what he has said about replacement theory is actually an attack on his audience.
Because a mentally ill teenager murdered strangers, you cannot be allowed to express your political views out loud. That's what they're telling you. That's what they've wanted to tell you for a long time. But Saturday's massacre gives them a pretext, a justification.
And he's going on today saying this was a concerted effort by Democrats immediately to pounce on this, et cetera. But as I brought up yesterday on the show, he has brought up this replacement theory, I think, 400 times within several months. So this is something that he talks about often. And I just want to get your take on it.
Well, basically, there's that old saying, it's become a cliche, you're entitled to your own opinions, you're not entitled to your own facts. And the problem with a replacement theory is it's based upon a whole series of lies. There is no evil program by Jewish elites or any other kind of elites to try to extinguish the white race. The idea that white people are because of our racial heritage subject to some kind of persecution today is paranoid, it's sick, it's inaccurate, and it's dangerous. And I do think that the right thing to do for people associated in any way with Mr. Carlson or some of the corporations he works for to dissociate themselves, not necessarily from Tucker himself as an individual, but from the whole idea of a replacement. It's really theology, paranoia. The whole claim, and frankly, it's a claim that's been made on the left as well, that we are about to, quote, lose our white majority or lose our Christian majority. Basically, it ignores the fundamental realities of American life, which is that right now there is intermarriage at a level never seen before. And I think that most Americans and decent Americans have gone on beyond this obsession with racial identity.
You said decent Americans, and that really stood out to me. Does this hurt the Republican Party when the association with Tucker Carlson or Marjorie Taylor Greene and all these folks are really going ham, going hard about this topic right here, replacement theory? Does it hurt the Republican Party?
Potentially it does, unless the party makes it very clear that the main advocates for replacement theory, frankly, have been French. That's where the entire thing originated, and it originated against immigrants in France. There was a book that launched the whole theory called The Camp of the Saints that came out about 40 years ago, 50 years ago. And the truth of the matter is that none of the prominent, this has not been a prominent association of President Trump. Of Stephen Miller, maybe. And look, Asa Hutchinson, the governor of Arkansas, good Republican and a decent human being, and I use the term decent again, said yesterday, and I think it's very important, that really it's important to move on beyond this. Conservatism is honorable. Replacement theory, promoting paranoia and conspiracism is not honorable, and it's not helpful. It's deeply destructive.
It is deeply destructive, and it used to be something that was primarily embraced by white supremacy groups, but it has become more mainstream among some circles, and it is used as a way to say, well, this is happening because it is part of a ploy to change the votes and get people here to vote liberal because people of color equals liberal. I mean, and I think that's the way that some try to frame it.
It's worse than that, Ursula, because reading some of the material that was put together by the killer in Buffalo, he actually says that the reason that the elites are trying to get more and more immigrants here and more people of color is because they are intellectually and morally inferior, and it is easy to control such people.
Yeah. it is sick, but I'm surprised that more people don't denounce it.
That's where I was going with it. And Michael, you, when we have our discussions and we're talking, like, it's really easy to talk to you because I believe that you like to, I mean, we can disagree on some things, but you're on the side of right is right and wrong being wrong, and you use the word decent all the time. So why? Why won't the majority of the Republican Party denounce this? Because I don't believe the most Republicans, I hope not. I don't believe most Americans think this way. But I just don't understand why folks won't denounce it and talk down about it the way that you're talking about it, because we believe in decent human beings.
Or Adam Kinzinger.
And by the way, I think, by the way, there are more Republicans than you realize, and who, particularly in terms of this absolutely awful event in Buffalo, are completely appalled and chagrined by it. But then for other people, there are folks who do not want to be attacked on on TV every night by the guy with the biggest audience right now on TV.
Oh, okay.
You just nailed it.
You just nailed it.
That's exactly what we were talking about off air. Because what happens is, yes, you don't want to be ridiculed by the person who has 3 million viewers every single night. That is the fear.
It is, and it's one of those things where, honestly, at least what Fox News, I think, has a problem, because I don't think the number of people who are horrified and disgusted by this Buffalo event. And by the way, it's true to say he also expressed contempt for Fox News. This evil idiot, he actually thinks that Rupert Murdoch, who's a grandson of Presbyterian ministers, and he thinks he's Jewish. And one of the things that he had on his website was pictures of Fox News personalities who he hates because he believes they are Jewish. And they're not. I mean, it's again, what we're talking about is someone who is 18 years old. He's deeply deranged. He's an evil killer. And by the way, should be a candidate for the death penalty, don't you think?
Potentially. I mean, for me, yes. I'm not even looking at
like tomorrow.
Yeah. In this case, I mean, the what he was talking about and what he committed is just atrocious.
Do you know what was most striking to me, Ursula?
What was
that? It's something that he actually filmed. It was part of that tape where he is approaching and he's raising his gun. You can see he's raising his gun toward a white guy, and he doesn't really see him because the guy's wearing a baseball cap. And then the guy looks up and he sees that he's white. He says, "Oh, sorry." And then puts the gun down. He was specifically wanting to kill not just people who came in his path, black people who came in his path. I mean, that is a definition of
evil.
But the
one thing that also struck me, and you brought up 18, and you know, should he be in line for the death penalty? And you know, that's a whole nother conversation. But the other thing that struck me is, how does someone at that young age have that much hate? And then, of course, you look at, and you look at what he is spouting out there on his manifesto or whatever it is that you want to call it, and you see, well, you know, how many times has all this stuff been brought up? I mean, he didn't do that in a vacuum.
It's the same stuff that motivated, obviously, the killer in Christchurch, New Zealand. What's fascinating to me is the most prolific of all these killers, who's Bering Breivik, the guy in Oslo, Norway, who killed 72, 73 young people. They were not racial targets. They were political targets. They were at some kind of socialist youth camp. But it was that same idea that somehow there's an evil conspiracy to destroy our traditional way of life, et cetera, et cetera. And that was in Norway. And so I would not say that this was something that was so specific that it was one political point of view. And also, again, people are bringing up the fact that he had contemptuous words. I don't think there's any evidence at all that he saw himself as any kind of Trumper. And I think that is important and fair to bring up.
Yeah, and I didn't even, you know, we didn't bring that up, but I mean, you brought up Norway, but also El Paso, Texas. There are other things that he referenced as well that inspired him. But we're not even bringing up Trump. We're just talking about this great replacement theory that keeps getting brought up.
Michael.
Yeah, and by the way, ought to be buried outside somewhere with an open field with a stake through its heart. I mean, just should be gone from our discourse.
Michael, domestic terrorism is for sure a problem right now in this country. Sometimes people are slow to label it what it is. Just recently, I think it was yesterday, 203 Republicans voted against a bill to combat domestic terrorism. Why?
I'm not aware of this vote. Tell me, what did the bill provide? What was it calling for?
Yesterday it was a few votes that happened yesterday.
Let me explain that for you. So under current law, there are the federal agencies that, you know, investigate terrorism. This bill would have required each agency to open offices specifically dedicated to investigating domestic terrorism, and also look into the issue of white supremacism infiltrating the military. 203 Republicans voted against it, apparently because they oppose the Justice Department engaging in further domestic surveillance.
Again, I can't comment on the bill without looking at it in detail, but I would imagine that Republicans often are just by nature, and I share this allergy, are allergic to new government agencies and initiatives because they don't always follow the path that they're expected to achieve any sorts of results. So I think it would be very terribly wrong to characterize these no votes on what you're describing yesterday as votes in favor of domestic terrorism. By the way, I agree with the notion that it is a problem and it deserves more attention. But again, we ought to point out that the overwhelming majority of murders that we have in the United States are murders, it's not a literal majority, but a disproportionate number are murders of black people by black people. And that is a tragedy, and that is a national problem.
Okay, real quick. Michael, when you start talking about numbers of that, just so you know, 87% with white people kill white people.
Right.
I just want to tell you. And then when it comes to black people, it's about 89 and 90%. So when you say there's a huge problem, make sure you say it all in context that there's people that kill white people.
You're entirely correct.
So I don't understand how that talking point came about, because that talking point that gets used off the time about we have a problem in this country with black people killing black people. We have a problem in this country with white people.
No, we have a problem with murder.
There you go.
Thank you.
Period.
Yes.
Period. And,
correct.
And again, what I'm saying is that, and by the way, it is, of course, it is a particular problem when it is a hate crime. That's why we have these designations of hate crimes, because then you're aiming not at a random victim. You're aiming at hoping to commit your own contributions to genocide. And the whole ideology of hate crimes and crimes based upon race or religion are a different level of evil and threat.
Michael, we have 30 seconds long here, because I want to ask you, what did we learn from the primaries that just happened? If you could give us a synopsis, does it give you hope or does it make you worried?
It depends on which primary. The fact that Madison Cawthorn lost gives me hope.
Yes, you and me both. Okay, what about what's going on in Pennsylvania?
I think President Trump's statement that he should just declare victory when he may in fact lose in a recount. Why do we have recounts? Why do we have voting at all if you're just going to randomly declare victory because you want to win?
Well, there you go. Great question. One we pose quite often. Michael, thank you so much. Our conversations always go too quickly, and we never get into everything that we want to talk about. So we'll do it again next week.
Talk soon, and good luck with Mayor Harrell.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Coming up next on the G and Ursula Show, Rachel Bell comes in to promote her free feature, Asian American Food and a Local Cookbook Author. We'll do that next, G and Ursula.
You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell.
Welcome back to the Gian Ursula Show. It's always fun to have Rachel. And one of our listeners texted in and said, anytime Rachel comes in, it's like a burst of sunshine. And I agree.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you, listener. Was it my mom? Was her name Barbara?
No.
Okay, cool.
How is Barbara?
Barbara is doing pretty good.
She's doing very
well. Well, for people who don't know, my parents divorced like 4 years ago, 3 years ago, and then secretly got remarried in Las Vegas like a couple years ago. And I was like, excuse me? Like, what?
Always keeping it interesting.
They've split up and got back together many times on top of that. But yeah, so
It's
kind of interesting.
Wow.
It's very, let's just say, interesting. My family's
it's
interesting.
Complicated,
yeah,
as they say.
As Avril Lavigne once said.
So we're going to be talking about food, which I always love, but there's a specific cookbook author who is talking about some amazing Asian baked goods.
Yeah. So when the pandemic hit, Renton's Cat Lou did what a lot of us did. She started baking, but there were these particular flavors that she craved.
I wanted to bake the Asian way, where I could eat all these foods that brought me so much comfort, like my egg tarts, things that I've had in Hong Kong, things I've had in my childhood, thinking back on the mooncakes, the milk breads, the mochis.
But she'd actually never baked any of these things before. So she went online and got some recipes, but she wanted there to be a forum where she could ask questions and she could post the things that she made. So she started this Facebook group called Subtle Asian Baking. She said it's a spinoff from these already existing Subtle Asian groups. And she said, if you're Asian American, you know about these groups. I did not. So I said, what is Subtle Asian? And this is her interpretation.
So let's say I make a macaron and I use matcha. A macaron is a French creation. But by adding that matcha in there, now I have a subtle Asian baked goodie. It's a bit like fusion, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say I mix my dough with chopsticks. Let's say I'm making a chiffon cake that I remember my grandma made for me, filled with light cream and fresh fruits. She learned from restaurants in Vietnam. It's a chiffon cake with some French inspirations, but it's also very subtly Asian.
Kat started this group last May, and May, right now, is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. And so since last year, it's ballooned to 140,000 followers on Facebook and 130,000 on Instagram. But the reason that this story is significant, you know, a lot of people start blogs and all of that, is that they decided to do some good. So last year, when the media was reporting on a rash of anti-Asian hate crimes,
we decided to have a purpose, which is to help stop Asian hate, especially around May, which is the Asian American and a Pacific Islander Heritage Month. We are asking bakers from around the world to host their own bake sales. They could be virtual, they could be in person, and then they could donate proceeds to a fundraiser that we've chosen as a community. So last year, we were raising funds for Welcome to Chinatown, which is a grassroots organization in New York City. We were able to buy 1,000 hot meals from local businesses and give them to older adults. This year, we're working with a former Seattle anchor, Michelle Lee's The Very Asian Foundation.
So they have raised about $30,000 since last May. Kat is half Vietnamese and half Chinese, and she says changing people's perceptions of Asians in America is truly a matter of life and death.
I've been a victim of hate crimes. I've been a victim of racism and microaggression. So I feel a lot of fear and a lot, sometimes anger. Fortunately, we're in the Renton area of Seattle. I do feel a lot safer. I used to live in Brooklyn area, but every time I hear something about a shooting that went on, you know, someone being pushed into the subways, Michelle Goh, Christina Yuna Lee, who are women who very much like me, you know, working women in their 30s, the same straight black hair, merely for existing for who they are and what they look like, were brutally murdered. You never know what will happen just for being who I am, just for being Asian. We were scared. I'm very frank about it, right?
So Kat has worked as a physical therapist for 13 years, but last year, thanks to the success of Subtle Asian Baking, they got some national press and she was offered a cookbook deal. So she was able to quit her job. She wrote Modern Asian Baking, which is going to be out next month.
So important for this book to come out now because representation really, really matters, not just during May, during AAPI month, during the entire year. You know, we are as American as anyone else. Yes, I celebrate all these Asian holidays, but I also celebrate Thanksgiving and Halloween and Christmas, you know, so we are not the others. We are as American as the next American.
So if you want to pre-order her book or if you want to directly donate to hashtag Very Asian, the fundraiser they do, or learn how to start a bake sale of your own, you can go to mynorthwest.com/Rachel Bell.
Thank you so much for doing that. First of all, I love what you said. We are not others, because that is so often how we are made to feel, is we are not others. But I've got to admit something. I'm Asian American, and this is the first time I've heard about subtle Asian baking. Mm. Like, where have I been? And I love the idea. And, you know, so now I want to look into it even more. But I mean, but I understand fusion. That I understand. But I love that it's trying to make it more accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
And the new book looks beautiful. I'm excited to get it myself.
You know, I figured out your game, Rachel Bell.
What? I think I know what you're going to say.
Well, the best way to learn about other cultures is through music and or food.
Yep.
And I'm telling you, you've been on this food kick, and it gives you an opportunity to talk to and learn about all of these different cultures.
Yep.
So this is about you. Tell me what you get out of this experience and talking about food in the way that you do?
Well, what I've learned through doing a lot of food stories in my podcast, Your Last Meal, which centers around food, new episode out today with Taylor Hanson from Hanson, remember, Mbop. They just released their 11th album today, yeah. Is that, you know, there's so much more. There's history, there's culture. I mean, it really tells a story. It tells a story of immigration. There's politics. Like, it's so much more than just eating and liking the flavor of something. And I think it's fascinating. I mean, you can really, like, track immigration through the foods in a country. So I can't always explain what it is for me. I've been really, really obsessed with food since I was a little kid. And just getting more in depth in that way as I've gotten older just makes it more, you know, interesting for me.
And, well, I love also that, I mean, I've known Rachel for many years. I mean, when was your first
2005.
Year? 2005. And one of the first things she wanted to do, stick a fork in it.
Yeah, we used to do our little reviews. Yeah.
So this goes back way back.
You know, it's interesting because you can say, oh, food brings people together. It's a way to learn. Yes. But then there's the other side of it where, for example, Trump wanted to build a wall between the United States and Mexico. And then he'd talk about how much he loved his taco salad. So, you know, sometimes there is still a divide. People can go to Panda Express and still be very racist against Asian people. So it's not so nice and clean and tidy to say that it fully brings people together, but it does help.
Yes.
Thank you, Rachel Bell.
Thank you.
Appreciate all you do.
Of course.
Hey, coming up next, in this scenario, it has to do with being called honey. And this person did not like that. Gene Ursula. The G and Ursula Show. I don't know what Nick's jamming here with, but woo, it really
does. Oh, you like that? I know that.
Yeah, I like that. Hey, coming up at 11 o'clock, see what Chef's got cooking for us for Agree to Disagree. But right now, scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
My new guy is pretty cool, but does one thing that makes me crazy, and I don't know whether to talk with him about it or not. Every time we leave one another, he says, "Drive safe, honey. Text me when you get home so I know you made it safely." And I want to say to him, "Hey, how about you drive safe, you..." But I don't say it at all. I don't think he means to be condescending. And I think he wants to show that he cares. So in a way, it's kind of sweet. But it's insulting, and it drives me crazy. My friend thinks it's a sign that he looks down on women. She says what he's really saying is, "You're a woman and don't know how to drive." I don't know about that, but if there is a philosophical reason as to why he's doing this, I'd rather know now than waste my time with him. What do you guys think? I don't want to confront him and freak him out, but this is really bugging me. 888-973-CHIRO is the State Roofing text line. Ursula, you're up to bat first.
I'm just astounded by the number of people who are in relationships who are too afraid to say something to their partner if something bothers them. Something as simple as, "Do you mind not calling me sweets and honey?" It makes me feel this way. I feel this way when you call me those, and I know that you do it coming from a good place, but it makes me feel this way. Can you stop? And then I would have more of an opinion if you say it, you let him know it bothers you, and if he continues to do it anyway, then you have a bigger issue. If he thinks he's being loving and has no idea that it makes you feel the way that you do, then it's not on him, it's on you. Why don't people just feel like they can say something in a relationship like, "Hey, that bothers me. Can you stop?"
Ursula, you're really opening up the door to me going somewhere else.
Oh, okay. But well, go ahead and go somewhere else.
No. Before Chef says anything, I'm going to keep this simple. I think that we have a bad problem with calling women hun and honey and doll and all, especially if it's a server or cashier. "Oh, thanks, hun." And we just do that way too much. We got to stop that.
But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about his in girlfriend. A relationship.
Yeah, but
it was like, "Hey, hun, you know what? If someone comes, hey, hun, or, you know, sweetie or whatever, or sweet, you know, that's an endearing term. That's a loving term.
Call
in
it
my
yobo.
Mind.
Yobo. Now, That's what I call Lillian Yobo.
Whatever. It's a term of endearment. If it's used as a way to suppress someone or oppress someone or whatever, that's a whole nother thing. But I don't think that's what that is in that case. And it's just a lack of communication.
And then sometimes in relationships, folks don't want to get really honest about what they like and don't like.
Oh, go ahead, Chef. Gotcha.
Well, she doesn't object to the nickname. She objects to being infantilized by needing to check in that she made it home okay. Which is kind of infantilizing, I guess, but I do this with my guy friends. Like, hey, you know, we were out, we had a beer. Hey, man, you cool? You make it home? Not a big deal. Here's the issue, though. You're not being infantilized by your boyfriend having good intentions and checking on you. I'm sure his mom or someone in his life was like, hey, this is something you should do. Or maybe he knows someone that got in a really bad car accident. The problem is you're infantilizing yourself by saying, I don't have the self-assertiveness and confidence to bring up something that is really, really bothering me with my boyfriend. Like, look, if he opens the door for you every time you go out to a restaurant and you find that infantilizing, but don't say anything about it, who is the child? That is you. This is a you problem, not a him problem, until you address it.
I just want to say, any of the servers out there in the world, grandmamas, when you call me doll, and what do you want to eat, hun? I know the food is going to be good.
Okay, there you go. So know your audience as well, right?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
But I see that a bunch of people are texting in and saying things like, well, you don't want to objectify someone or whatever. Again, let them know first. Let them know so that they... And if it continues, then there's an issue. But here's the other thing. Mm. If someone's checking in that you made it safely,
yeah.
I love that.
Me too.
Again... Someone cares. I was going to say something else. Someone cares.
What does LLM call you?
Earth.
Oh, Earth. Mm. Okay.
When someone shortens it, then I know that they're it's family, a loved one.
Earth. What's your mama call you?
Earth. Ushy. I mean, there's just, okay.
When she's mad at you, what she call you?
That doesn't happen too often.
Oh. When she's mad at honey, what she call her?
What does Lillian call you?
Babe.
Babe, that's what Mark calls me too, and I'll say it too. Is that making you feel like she's objectifying you, or
like I like Yobo? That's Korean way of saying that.
There you go.
I mean, I'm siding with Chef here. I've had friends in the past; they like text each other, like make sure you get home safe after a night out or like hanging out with other people. But I'm with this other guy. Like, she's in the wrong. You want to speak up if something's wrong. I mean, he's just trying to be nice, but she needs to open up and tell how she feels. You can talk to me. I mean, this isn't the sixth grade anymore. You can tell, be honest with somebody. Come on now.
Not all the time. Hey, coming up next, it's time for everybody's favorite segment. It is Agree to Disagree. It's G and Ursula.